You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. HuntStand is the most popular and functional mobile hunting app on the market. With a variety of base maps to choose from, satellite imagery that is updated every month, the ability to check the weather, know property information, and even catalog your trail cam pics, HuntStand even gives you the ability to import pins and location markers from other mobile apps. Visit HuntStand.com or download wherever you download your apps. Enter discount code SN20 at checkout for 20% off. Woo! How we doing? I'm jacked up off coffee, and I had a cinnamon roll, so there's some sugar in my system too. So I'm feeling pretty fired up on this Friday morning. I'm pretty happy, man. I'm in a really good mood, and I am excited to launch this episode. I was gonna do something completely different, but this is what is on my mind right now. And so I did a podcast about it. It's about hunting rules and regulations. And if you wanna go check out the YouTube channel, we have it up there as well, the Sportsman's Empire YouTube channel. We have the full interview there as well, the video version. And you guys can check that out if you like. Go subscribe. But here's what I've been thinking about lately. I've been thinking about a couple questions and a couple polls that I have taken in recently on Instagram. And the outcome of those polls, and I know I have a very limited amount of people that answered that compared to like a statewide study. But it gives me an insight into my demographic, I would say, the demographic who follows me and the Nine Finger Chronicles and the Empire. But it just had me thinking, like, there's a rule in place. For example, a majority of the people don't like this rule or don't like this regulation. Why does your state have it then? And so it leads me to have these conversations with myself and others about, if the majority of people don't like something, why is it the way it is? Especially when talking about deer hunting rules and regulations. Now, if it is strictly a management rule and regulation, meaning, hey, we need this to keep deer numbers at bay, or we need this to, to manage the natural resource in a specific way, 100% get it. But the example that I'll use here is that a majority of people who answered the poll wished their gun season was pushed out of the rut, meaning maybe the last week in November or even into December, similar to Iowa setup. And so what this leads me to believe is that that rule and regulation, although it has probably been in it's been around in certain states forever, and there's a lot of people who like it. If there's also a lot of people who don't like it, then I feel like they should have a voice too. And there should be this communication between the people who are on one side of the fence and the people who are on the other side of the fence on a certain topic, and communicate and say, hey, what is best for the natural resource? What is best for the deer herd? And what is best for us as a group to get more of what we want, with the outcome here of being, for example, of this topic is, hey man, all of our 2 and 3 year olds are getting smoked every gun season because it's right in the middle of the rut. If we move that out, maybe a couple of these deer make it through, and we have an older age class of bucks, which makes our state more desirable, which makes people happy. Because I'll tell you what, there's a lot of people out there who bitch and complain about not having big bucks in their state, but if they shot a big buck, they would be very happy, right? And so I don't know. It's just, it's one of these things where we have to do less pointing fingers and more talking about some of these problems. You know, all hunters unite under one voice and then communicate of what we like, what we don't like with the Department of Natural Resources, and not let that be influenced by certain politicians, right? And that's what this whole conversation is about today. I'm going to kind of cut it off there and let you listen to the episode. The guest today is John Hudspeth of the Oklahoma Outdoors podcast. He's also on the Sportsman's Empire Network. And we talk about if he's happy with the rules and regulations in Oklahoma, if I'm happy with the rules and regulations in Iowa, and how people are, how these rules and regulations change and who influences them, things like that. And so it's a really good conversation. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. So I'm just going to get into the commercials now, and then we'll get right into the episode. So if you're looking for a saddle, go check out Tethered. Tethered has a full lineup of saddle hunting accessories, climbing sticks. I'm missing something here. Platforms. If you want to become a better saddle hunter, go check out Tethered and their all their media that they put out, all the content that they put out is designed to make you a better saddle hunter as well. So go check out Tethered. WaspArchery.com. I'm just going to give you the discount code right now, NFC20. And really what that is a 20% discount code for all of Wasp's products. And why do I work with Wasp? Is because I am confident in that equipment. I feel like if that broadhead hits a deer, even on a marginal shot, it's going to cause a ton of destruction, and it's going to lead me to a recovery. And so you put one of those on a marginal shot, it's going to lead to recovery. But if you also do it in a very the sweet spot, the heart and the lungs and whatnot, you're looking at a very short blood trail and a deer that dies very quickly. And ultimately that's what we want. WaspArchery.com. Vortex Optics. If you're looking for spotting scopes, binoculars, red dots, rifle scopes, range finders, you need to go check out VortexOptics.com. Not only that, but did you know that they have a really, really popular apparel line? And I wear t-shirts. They sent me a box of t-shirts and hoodies and hats and even socks. And I think there's more apparel coming down the line. These guys, this Vortex apparel line is badass, man. It's the comfortable t-shirts, awesome logos, and it kind of lets you know, like every once in a while when I'm walking in a grocery store, I'll see a guy with a Vortex hat and we lock eyes because I'm wearing a Vortex hat. He knows I'm a badass. I know he's a badass. And we just kind of look at each other and like, the I respect you nod, and then we keep moving. So go check out VortexOptics.com. And last but not least, Hunt Stand, right? This time of year, if you're looking probably maybe at an out-of-state hunt, or you're looking e-scouting on a property that you want to hunt, you're sitting in your cubicle at work, or you're rocking your baby to sleep, and as you're rocking the baby to sleep, you're scrolling through Hunt Stand trying to find pinch points, trying to find access routes, trying to find south-facing slopes, trying to find where to park your truck, who the landowner is, all that kind of stuff. Right. And what that does is allows you to journal and document everything that you see and put it on Hunt Stand. And then you can reference that at a later date. And the more data points you have on a map, the more information you have that allows you to make better decisions to get closer to deer or whatever game you're trying to track. And so go check out huntstand.com, read up on all the functionality and take a look at the Pro Whitetail platform while you're there as well. So, Tethered, Wasp, Hunt Stand, Vortex, and last but not least, I say that twice, but it's 2% for conservation. Go check out fishandwildlife.org if you want to become 2% for conservation certified. And what that means is you're giving 1% of your time and 1% of monetary contribution to, not 2% for conservation, any conservation organization that you want at a local level, at a national level. It could be bees, it could be birds, it could be deer, it could be worms. Whatever conservation effort you want to support, that will get you 2% for conservation certified. Great organization. Go read up fishandwildlife.org. And now we're done. with the how I make my money. So I appreciate you guys. Go to iTunes, please leave a five-star review. Go and comment. Let's create a community on the Nine Finger Chronicles and the Nine Finger Chronicles and the Sportsman's Empire Instagram pages, and let's communicate. Let's talk. Let's have conversations, because ultimately that's what we want, right? We want to create a community and this big voice to let everybody know that, hey man, don't mess with us hunters. So there's that. Enjoy the episode, and we'll talk to you next time.
2-1.
All right, all the way from Oklahoma on the phone with me today, Mr. John Hudspeth. John, man, what's up?
Not much, man. It's been pretty good. My wife and I, we've been doing Whole 30. Do you know what that is?
So, like, no, I don't. What's Whole 30?
It's one of those diet things where it's basically like meat, vegetables, and fruits. You know, no bread, no soda, no alcohol, anything like that. Okay. And I've known a lot of people who've done it, and usually, like, you know, it's like people on Facebook, and they're like, oh, you know, day 3, I feel so much better. Day 4, and you know, I see all this improvement. I'm on day 14, and like, those people are, they're full of bullshit, man. It's terrible. So, yeah,
that's funny.
I'm not a coffee drinker. I normally drink Red Bull, which obviously is terrible for you. Like, I know that. And I was in Home Depot yesterday, and I walked by like the Red Bull fridge, and my mouth just like immediately started watering. Like, all the cravings are still there. Yeah. So that's how I'm doing. Welcome to the show.
That is hilarious. That might have been, I needed that laugh today, because, and I've been through that before. Man, I would say about 2 years ago, I was just a slob. Like, I didn't really work out too much. Maybe a little over 2 years ago, and I didn't really work out too much. I was eating. I was that guy who would like eat supper and then eat supper again. Like, I just was a slob, man. Anyway. And so I started doing like this high protein diet. It wasn't really anything specific, I was still eating carbs. I was eating less carbs, but way more protein and way more clean protein, like, you know, just straight chicken breasts or deer meat or whatever.
Yeah.
And so when I started that, everybody's like, oh, this is so good for you, so good for you. All I wanted to do was crush blizzards from Dairy Queen. Man, I just had, just like you and your Red Bull, every time I would drive by a Dairy Queen or like a Culver's or some kind of ice cream shop, my steering wheel would just kind of slowly start turning in that direction. Then willpower sucks, man. I don't have very much of it.
Yeah. I have willpower with a lot of things, but not food, as you can see by my, you know, physique here.
Well, hey, at least you're on the right direction. Are you matching the diet or the new diet with a workout routine at all?
No, I had every intention to, tried to, but so my wife is actually out of town right now. She works in youth ministry, and this is spring break. And so she is on a spring break trip with the youth group. And so I have our eight month old baby all by myself this week. And so
that's a workout.
Oh yeah, working a full-time job and taking care of the baby and trying to do some podcasts. And so the workout has not come yet.
What is she? Is she sleeping right now?
She is. Yeah. Luckily, she's been sleeping great. The time change actually worked in my favor, because I can put her down and she falls asleep really good, and she's basically sleeping an extra hour because of that. You know what she used to wake up, and so that's actually turned out really well. So.
That's awesome, man. Well, hey, but you're a rancher, right? You're a rancher, a farmer.
So I was. I actually left the ranch a little while back. Now I work for a custom home builder.
Okay, I gotcha. Yep. And so are you out moving around all day long?
I am. Not as much as when I was ranching, you know, not as much physical activity. Yeah, right. When I left the ranch, I gained some weight pretty I guess I just didn't realize how physical I was out there.
Yeah.
And now, like, I'm outside a lot walking around, but I'm not like lifting stuff, you know, I'm not working, you know, I'm more of a manager. Yeah. And so,
gotcha.
That's part of what led into the Whole 30 thing. I realized I needed to lose a little weight.
So now, after you've done this, you made that transition away from the ranch. Do you miss the ranch now?
I do sometimes, yeah. It
Yeah.
was kind of a mixture of, working a ton. Like I was basically working 12 on, 2 off at the ranch. Cows got to eat every day, and then my wife was a little sick of, living out in the middle of nowhere, and so we moved a little bit closer to her family. So I do miss it. It's been a little different hunting wise, because I hunted on the ranch, and so I'd work. And if I got off early enough, I'd just go hunt. And so that was a little bit different this year, but still got some hunting time in, so no complaints.
And that's kind of a perfect transition into, originally I wanted to get you on today and I wanted you to be part of the Anything But Deer Hunting series that we've been talking about on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast here. But a whole bunch of things have just kind of happened over the last month, and I just wanted someone to talk to about them. And you're the person who was on the schedule at this time, so you're going to be the person who gets to talk about it. Now,
Perfect.
lately, I've been posting a lot of questions on the Nine Finger Chronicles Instagram page about things like, are you happy with your state's rules and regulations? Are would you be willing to move your gun season out of the rut, basically, later into December in order to establish maybe a higher age class of bucks and things like that? And it's pretty eye-opening, the results compared to what the actual rules and regulations are in a specific state. And I know that I'm guessing anyway, somebody brought this up, that a lot of my followers are probably bow hunters first and then gun hunters second. So that might be like an influence of how people answered certain questions. But I kind of want to pass it to you, because do you hunt Oklahoma and Texas, or just Oklahoma?
I do. I hunt both. So I have a buddy who has a big lease in West Texas that he basically gives me free rein of. And he actually prefers people rifle hunt it instead of bow hunt it. He tries to manage it pretty hardcore. Not only does he prefer rifle hunt, but he prefers you to have like a suppressor on your rifle to keep the noise down. A lot of it is about, wind and busting deer. With a rifle, you can be further back. You're not right up there on the food plot or feeder or whatever. So yeah, I do a decent amount of rifle hunting just because, like I said, he kind of prefers that. Oklahoma, I do more rifle hunting now than I used to, actually. I think part of that is because of the podcast. Like, I'm trying to kind of relate to everybody in the state. And so I used to be very hardcore bow hunter, still am very hardcore bow hunter. But, when muzzleloader rolls around, I'm not afraid to pick up a muzzleloader for a few days. When rifle rolls around, I'll pick up a rifle for a few days. So, yes, I would call myself a bow hunter, absolutely. But I do a decent amount of rifle hunting also.
Gotcha. All right, let's talk about because your home state is Oklahoma, right? I want to talk about Oklahoma here for a second, and I'll kind of share my thoughts on Iowa. Are you currently happy with the rules and regulations that Oklahoma has for its deer hunters?
It's a little bit of a loaded question because I'm in a situation where I am pretty happy with it, but it's because I get to benefit from it more than most people. Just kind
And
of
why
the
is
land,
that? Why is that?
it's because the land we have and where we have it, I don't have a lot of hunting pressure around me. We're in a cattle area. We're not really in a farming area. The closest farm is a long ways away. Actually, the county that we're in is one of the top cattle producing counties in the entire country. So we're in cattle country, but it just so happens that kind of right in our little pocket, we have a lot of timber and some draws and stuff that is fantastic deer habitat also. So I'm kind of in a little island. So I don't have to deal with a lot of pressure. But I will say, if I had to take a temperature across the whole state, a lot of people are not as happy as I am. There's a you know so we're a 2 buck state. And you can actually so you get 2 bucks total. You can kill two with a bow, or you can kill one with a bow, one with a gun, or you can actually kill one with a muzzle loader and one with a rifle. So you actually get two gun tags total. Now those seasons are very short. You have a 1 week muzzle loader and then you have a 2 week rifle. Muzzle loader is pre-rut, so it's the last week of October. And then rifle season comes in right at the end of the rut. So it's the last, it always starts the Saturday before Thanksgiving and runs into the first week of December.
So the third week of November.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. And so a lot of people don't like that because the bucks are still kind of rutting. Then that's when a lot of the bigger bucks are kind of up on their feet. You know, the rut's somewhat winding down. Those bigger bucks still have the energy to get out there. Again, me and my little island, I kind of love it because, you know, I usually self-imposed, I usually save one tag for archery. You know, if I kill one with a muzzle loader, I'm probably not going to kill one with a rifle, vice versa. And so, you know, a lot of times maybe I've tagged a buck with my bow by then and I'll, you know, hunt with a rifle, or if I haven't, I'm going to hunt with a rifle, but I'm going to only shoot a buck if it's, you know, big, mature. And I'm going to save my bow tag for another buck. So again, kind of a loaded question because I don't mind it because of my little situation, but across the state, I mean, there's a very big push because everybody looks at, you know, the Midwest and they see one buck states, and they think that that's what they need. But I don't know. I actually had, the head of the D, what do we call ours? Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation on a few months ago. And asked him about some of these regulations, and he almost rolled his eyes at the idea of making it a one buck state, because, you know, according to their research, he said it's not going to help that much. He said, you know, I think he said less than 10% of people ever kill more than two bucks in this state. You know, most people only kill one. Now I heard a good argument against that. Sorry, I'm rambling. I'm all over the place, but
no, go for
I heard it. A good. I heard a good argument against that just a few weeks ago of, yes, people may only kill one buck, but because they have that second tag, they are probably more willing to shoot a buck with that first tag that they wouldn't shoot if they only had one tag, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. So they're going out and they're saying, well, because I have two buck tags, mm-hmm. I can shoot, you know, I can shoot a small buck. Or mm-hmm. a young buck, and then I'll kind of hold out until I Correct. Get a larger animal.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Now, a while ago, do you remember, was it 2 years ago or something? How long has the Oklahoma podcast been on the network?
Yeah, a little over 2 years.
Okay, a little over 2 years. And so when we first started communicating, and we, you know, like, dude, the hype, the state you wanted to be in, a couple years ago, I mean, right up there with Iowa was Oklahoma. And mm-hmm. dude, I think a couple years, the most 200 inch deer coming out of any state, it was Oklahoma. And mm-hmm. you were frustrated that Oklahoma was getting that type of attention. Why?
I mean, just like Iowa has a little bit of advantage because y'all already have kind of the limited out of state hunters in place. And so,
yeah.
Y'all are already kind of set up to protect yourselves, but Oklahoma's not. You know, it's go to Walmart, buy your tag, and not, you know, if you're an out-of-state hunter coming to Oklahoma, you go to Walmart, you pay $300, and they hand you six tags. You get two buck tags and four doe tags, or you can use all six on does. And so, yeah, you know, a part of me was a little bit selfish in the fact that just like, yeah, the word was getting out. Usually, you know, let's say somebody's going to come to Oklahoma for 5 days, you know, a rutcation or a long weekend or whatever, you know, if they're coming to public land for a few days, they're probably not going to be very picky on what they're shooting. And if they can shoot that many deer, you're just kind of asking for trouble. If you're trying to grow quality deer, you can go to Walmart and, you know, pay $300 and you get six deer tags, two buck tags, four doe tags, or you can shoot all six does. And so, yeah, you know, part of it was just selfishness. You know, it's just really, really easy for out of state hunters to come here. And, if you're an out of state or coming here, let's say you got 5 days to hunt or whatever, you know, a rutcation or a long weekend or whatever, you have all these deer tags, you're probably not going to be super picky with, you know, what you're going to shoot. Mm-hmm. Now we, you know, we have a large deer herd. Does is a big thing. You know, they keep upping the amount of doe tags they give us because we need to kill does, but it's just kind of still in the culture here. Like nobody shoots does. And so, you know, they can give out all the tags they want, but if nobody's shooting them, it doesn't matter how many tags they give. Lots of opportunities here. So it's, you know, good and bad depending on the situation you're in.
Yeah. And so I can come down to Oklahoma because my goal, I know I talked to you this about last year, it never happened, but if I draw Kansas this year, where I'll be hunting is probably only an hour from the Oklahoma border. So I'm thinking while I'm down there, I might as well make it a whole thing and try to hunt Kansas and Oklahoma in like this one big trip. And so, it's easy for me to come down. Now I can use any weapon I want as long as it's within the dates, right? Is Oklahoma a crossbow state?
They are a crossbow state. There's one little caveat on the weapons, which I kind of like, and I think a lot of people do. So if you're a non-resident, you have to buy one license per weapon. So, if it's muzzleloader season, you can still use your bow. But if you want to also muzzleloader hunt, you have to buy another $300 license. So that is one thing that I think they do well, because, you know, like, you know, there's a lot of people from out of state who own land here, but even if they own land, they have to buy all those different licenses. So it's just a way that the state kind of gets a little extra bonus. So that's right. One thing that I think they do well.
Right. When you talk with outdoorsmen, from Oklahoma all the time, in your state specifically, what are some of the biggest complaints that you hear from other hunters?
People not shooting does is actually a big one. Who have private land and are trying to manage for bigger bucks, and you know, they fill all their doe tags and they still have just as many does because their neighbor, you know, isn't shooting any. That's a big one. The whole two buck thing, man, it's split kind of down the middle. Me personally, I love it. Me on my little island, I have plenty of mature deer. I think this was my fourth year in a row to fill both my buck tags, and I killed 1 4-year-old. The rest were all 5 to 8 years old, you know, very mature deer. And so, you know, there's a lot of people like me that are kind of in that situation. Maybe they have a bunch of private land to hunt, that it's awesome because you get to hunt more. But there's a lot of people who maybe have smaller chunks, or maybe they're in an area where they get a lot more pressure. They would love to see Oklahoma as a one buck state. Those are probably the two big ones. There's definitely some people that would like to see that rifle season push back a little bit. To me, I think if you're trying to grow mature bucks and you're worried that gun hunters are taking them out, I personally think it would be more beneficial to adjust the muzzleloader season than the rifle season. Because typically by that last weekend, that last weekend of October, when muzzleloader's still open, you know, you're usually having some pretty good rut activity. If the weather cooperates, you know, if it gets cold, I've seen and killed a lot of big bucks that last weekend of October. And you know, you're getting pre-rut, so those big mature bucks, you know, they haven't had a chance to do any breeding yet. You know, they're not passing on those genes. So my personal opinion, if you were really concerned about big bucks and wanted to change your gun season, I would maybe move that muzzleloader up a week.
Yeah. I wish there was a poll that was taken that whenever someone would go hunting, like, what is your objective? So like for me and you, our objective every year is to try to harvest a mature buck, right? Try to kill a something with a higher age class, big antlers. That's our goal. And then our second objective, I don't know about what it is for you, would be to get some meat in the freezer for the family. And usually, I'm not saying every year this happens, because this year it didn't happen, but usually if I shoot a big enough buck, I have a lot of meat in my freezer, because my family isn't a family of sole deer meat. So I can typically accomplish my objectives of getting a big buck and filling my freezer for the year. Now, if I want to make jerky or something like that, then I'd have to probably get a dough. But I can accomplish those things relatively easy. And so some people probably don't have the same objectives as us. It'd be interesting to see what a state's objective is and what the percentage of people like, hey, I live in Iowa, I want to shoot big bucks. I live in Iowa, but I only am interested in meat hunting, or I am interested in only shooting does, or I'm only interested in turkeys, or whatever their main objective is. And I just think that kind of information would be helpful on having the proper rules and regulations, not only for the deer herd itself, but for the people who buy the tags in that particular mm-hmm. state.
Yeah.
Now when it comes, go ahead.
Oh, I got a question for you if that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to give you a chance to rant on your own state a little bit. So maybe this will feed into that, but like the argument that I keep talking about and a lot of people talk about is, you know, if you want to grow big bucks, it's got to be a one buck state. Got to be a one buck state. Like that's almost across the board. People say that. And everybody looks to Iowa, as you know, is kind of the big buck capital, and everybody wants to go hunt Iowa. But correct me if I'm wrong, technically Iowa is not a one buck state, right? In their situation where you can kill like three bucks.
Yes. Okay. So here's how Iowa lays out. I can get my archery tag as a resident. I can get my archery tag and I can get a firearm tag. Now this firearm tag is one of the muzzleloader seasons or a shotgun tag. So I can get early muzzleloader, which then I can't get another buck tag for anything. I can get late muzzleloader, which is the season that most people, that's the late season tag that a lot of people are interested in. And you can use muzzleloader. You can use, they call it a primitive weapons tag. So they, in a primitive weapon, it includes muzzleloader, archery equipment, crossbows, you know, those weapons. And so there I can get one firearm or late season tag, right? And then I can get one archery tag as a resident. So I can technically kill two antlered deer in the course of a year. Now, if I'm a landowner is someone with 4 acres or more, according to the Iowa rules and regulations, I can kill a third buck. I can get an additional any sex tag for being a landowner. Mm-hmm. So if you own land, if you bow hunt and muzzleloader or shotgun hunt, you can kill three bucks in a given year. Now, from my experience, and this is just my experience, there's very little, just like you were saying about the number of people who actually fill both buck tags, there are very few people in Iowa who fill, especially landowners, who fill all of those tags. Now, we have to remember, and I'm sure a state like Oklahoma and a state like Iowa are similar from the priority, and it's kind of changing in Iowa to the southern part of the state where the mecca of deer hunting really is. Anything north of Interstate 80 is not as coveted. Now there's still some decent deer hunting north of Interstate 80, but the mecca, the Iowa that everybody knows, is south of Interstate 80, in like, I don't know, I'd say like six or seven counties across the bottom of the map now, and along the Mississippi River you can find them too. So there's giant, I mean, there's, don't get me wrong, there's big deer, but the coveted spots are south of the Interstate 80 there. And so kind of finishing up the statement here is, I think very few people, because Iowa and Oklahoma are still agriculture focused states at this time, the landowners aren't necessarily using those tags to fill. They probably have other people on their properties, or mm-hmm. they lease out their properties, or there's an outfitter on their properties. And so I would say that I'm really happy with the current rules and regulations in the state of Iowa. One thing though that, okay. And so this is where, you know, you've talked a little bit about Oklahoma and where the change And I'm going to come back. I'm going to ask you a question, then I'm going to come back to Iowa. But you've mentioned a couple things that you'd like to see maybe change, maybe Oklahoma become a one buck state, or the way I would look at it would be that maybe the non-resident, maybe keep the residents happy, but change the non-resident tag to a one buck tag. And so the non-resident can still come in over the counter and take advantage of Oklahoma, give them as many no tags as they want, but only limit them to one, the non-resident to one tag. And so you're keeping the residents happy, but you're still giving the, you know, you're still giving the non-resident opportunity to hunt.
You read my mind.
Yeah.
You read my mind. That's when I had that episode with the commissioner, I had I got more responses on that episode than I ever had before. And that was probably the number one thing I got was, yes, let's let residents still have two. Let's let non-residents have one. I think that would make a lot of people happy. And, you know, you still get the tourism and, you know, the out-of-state dollars and all that good stuff. But you're still also kind of keeping it special for the residents.
Exactly. And because ultimately, man, like, I understand a non-resident having a say for some part in the rules and regulations. If they want to come to our state and they want to whatever, you know, or whatever state they're going to go be a non-resident hunter in, you know, first and foremost, they have to abide by the current rules and regulations of this state, but like, don't complain about it. You know, like, don't say, you know, like, I see that being a benefit for the state of Oklahoma. If you were to drop a non-resident tag off, or one of those tags off the non-residents option. I look at something like that, but a lot of it has to come down to what does the research and the data show? Does the research and the data show that, you know, we need to reduce that, or we should reduce that? Or is there a complaint by the residents, enough complaint by the residents of the state of Oklahoma to warrant such a move? And so, this is where the next question I have for you kind of comes into play. And that is, do you feel like in your state that you and other hunters have a voice that is actually being listened to by the Department of Wildlife?
You know, that's a great question. Part of me says that the fact that I'm having to think about this so hard says no. But I do feel like all of our wildlife, you know, employees and people are hunters and stuff. I know they get out there. They have a bunch of outreach programs. And so I definitely do think they're taking people's concerns into consideration. And, you know, but on the flip side of that, part of their job is not necessarily tying an emotional side to it, but trying to bring in the scientific side. You know, they're gathering the research, they're gathering the harvest data. And so, yeah, that's a great question that I don't have a good answer for. But I guess I like to think that they do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously with the goal, and I would assume, right. And I don't think this is the case in a lot of states. I'm assuming that all of the decisions that are being made at a rules and regulation level are in 100% benefit of the natural resource. So if it's a rule and regulation about turkey hunting, well, the best interest is the turkey, the wild turkey, or the rules and regulations for deer seasons, that the best interest is in the deer herd, the natural resource, right? And so when you start making decisions outside of that, that box, I guess I'll put it, then it's becoming more, it's almost treating the natural resource as a commodity, like cattle, and less like the natural resource that needs to be really, really managed in a very specific way, right? And so that kind of leads me to where I'm getting at, and this is where I'm struggling right now in Iowa, right? And so there's a lot of rules and regulations that are being proposed through politicians here in Iowa. And so I'm just going to cover this one right now. It's the crossbow. And we've had a big crossbow debate on social media over the last couple of weeks. I actually went to the Iowa Deer Classic and talked with a lot of people about rules and regulations for Iowa. And the big one is crossbows, right? So if the residents of Iowa said, you know what? We want a crossbow season. We want to be able to enjoy crossbows. I would be more apt to hearing a conversation about crossbows being implemented into Iowa during the archery season. But here's the truth. There is a company out of New York that owns a crossbow company and owns an airbow company. And so they did the math and they said that if we can get this bill passed in Iowa, we stand to make X number of dollars. So they hired lobbyists for very large amounts of money in the state of Iowa to lobby other politicians in our state to pass this law, and so or to get this law passed. And so there's a couple senators or politicians out there who are taking this money to, you know, say, hey, I'll help pass this bill. And they have no business doing that, right? They're not hunters, right? They're not communicating with the Department of Natural Resources at all about this. And so the issue then comes is we have this outside influence trying to tell us what to do in our state. And that just severely pisses me off, right? Because if I said to you, John, hey, John, this is these are the rules and regulations as a non-resident or as someone who may or may not even hunt, or I'm a business owner and I'm just going to pump some money into your system to try to get certain rules and regulations passed in your state that benefit only me, right? I feel like you would have a problem with that.
Oh, yeah. It's funny you bring that up, actually, because I just had a listener a few days ago send me that apparently there's a bill in Oklahoma right now about airbows.
That's the same thing in Iowa. Yeah.
And in the article I read, I don't know if it's, same company, different company, but apparently in the article I read, the airbow company was against it. Like this company said, like, no, we do not think these should be used in archery season. Yeah. But yet there's somebody pushing for them to be legal in archery season.
It's frustrating. And so that's where I'm frustrated at that's the big one. That's the big reason and why I have a problem with crossbows. It's not that I actually have a problem with crossbows, because Iowa, actually, you can hunt in Iowa. Now there's some stipulations. You can use a crossbow in the late season during the late muzzleloader season, right? So we do have a crossbow season. Youth, elderly, the term elderly makes me think of someone really old, but I think it's 60 or 65. I think it's 65. Then you can legally use a crossbow in Iowa. Or if you have a doctor's excuse, like I can't pull back a bow because of my shoulder, or I'm missing an arm or a hand or something that will actually prevent me from drawing a bow back, then you can use a crossbow with a doctor's note. And so, again, just saying, beating the dead horse here, but like the people of Iowa do not want this. We're not knocking down the doors to our politicians saying, we want crossbows. It's somebody else from some other state that is wanting this done. And I don't know about you, but I don't like that.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard all the arguments on the crossbows and stuff, and Yes, I agree. In the right situation, I think they're great. One of my best friends growing up, his brother was born with kind of a disformed hand. He had a note to use a crossbow before it was legal. He had a doctor's note. Kids, yep. I think it's fantastic. Older folks, yes, fantastic. I don't know. I'm torn, just like everybody, The idea of having more people out there, celebrating our sport, yes, that's, on the surface, that sounds fantastic. You know, could those people just try a little harder and use a regular bow? Probably. Or, you know, yes, make it to where it's not the entire archery season. That's also a good deal. I don't know. I go back and forth all the time on the crossbow.
Right. Right. And that's a personal opinion of ours. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, mm-hmm. so for me, I love bow hunting. Right. And then so, mm-hmm. so when I post these questions on Instagram, the comeback is, oh, so is a compound bow a bow compared to a traditional bow? And well, yes, it is, because you have to draw it back, right? Mm-hmm. A crossbow, you don't have to draw it back. You can cock it like a gun, mm-hmm. put it to your shoulder. I mean, it's a deadlier weapon. I know a lot of that has to do with whose hands it's actually in and if those people practice. Mm-hmm. And so whatever. That's my big gripe anyway.
Okay. I was going to say, I can tell you one more crossbow thing that'd make you even angrier. So my buddy that I talked about in West Texas, he bought a crossbow this year because, again, most of his stuff is set up for rifle hunters. He takes like business clients and clients' kids and stuff.
Yeah.
So he went out this year and he bought like the who's who of crossbow, and I'll leave the brand out. But anyway, not only is it, you know, this crazy souped up crossbow, but on top of it, it has a range finding scope, and the scope, I'm not talking about you push a button and it tells you how far it is. I'm saying you push a button and it adjust the crosshair for that distance to so like all you do is put that on the deer, and so yeah,
and when it comes to shoots that, the deer for you,
basically,
and it cleans it and it drags about. It to your truck.
Yeah, just about. So
that's nuts, man.
Yeah,
that's nuts.
So
And so like what I'm getting at here is, and I want to give another example here. Mm-hmm. All right. So there's a couple other rules and regulations in Iowa that I'm against. Right. And what this does is it, you know, whenever you say you're against something, there's going to be another group of people who they just go, oh, this guy's a prick. He doesn't want exclusivity, or he doesn't want people to actually be able, that was the wrong word. He doesn't want people to come and hunt his state and do this. But I do. I love the current setup here at the state of Iowa. I don't want mm-hmm. anything to change, right? There's some other rules and regulations that maybe I would change if I was in charge, but you know, I don't care. Like they don't affect me. I'm not gonna worry about those. But the one other big one in Iowa that will have it's kind of two of them that are connected. One of them is non-resident tags. They want to up that again. They want to, mm-hmm. I think they want to add an additional like 1500 tags. So it's going to jump from 6,000 tags or something like that to 7,500 tags. Right. Mm-hmm. And so then they want a certain portion of those allocated to outfitters, right? Like, man, I'm not a fan of how the whole allocating tags to outfitter thing works. Do I have a problem with outfitters? No, because there's a demand for them, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but I do not feel that they should automatically get tags, right? The non-resident should get the tag and then decide whether or not they want to use an outfitter, right?
Yeah, I actually didn't know that was a thing. And I thought you had to draw the tag and then hire the outfitter.
Oh yeah, you can. Yep. I mean, that's a proposed bill. So mm-hmm. as of right now,
you
have to get the tag. Then you have to go to the outfitter, outfitter going, hey, we got non-resident tags for sale. And mm-hmm. then those would be jacked up in price. Right.
Yeah.
The other one is landowners being able to transfer or sell their landowners tags to whoever they want. Again, increasing the number of tags that are here in Iowa. And then the one that I feel has the biggest impact on the state right now, a landowner, a non-resident landowner, so someone who just owns land in state but does not live here as its primary residence, still has to go through the draw system in our state and still has to go into the lot, like the preference points and whatever state or unit you're in, you have to do this. Now, a lot of people, this is where a lot of the people that listen to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, they're not from Iowa. So they hear this and some people go, well, that's not right. And I'm sorry, but the reason Iowa is the number one coveted state, and that tag is the number one coveted state tag in the entire country, is because of the management that we've done up until this point on a state that has little to no public land. It has little to no cover compared to Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and all the other surrounding states, right? It's very limited cover. Most of that cover is to the south of Interstate 80, which is why we have this mecca. The rules and regulations keep that at the quality of our bucks there, our deer herd in check for the most part. And so then if we open up this non-resident landowner to come, what's going to happen is, again, the price of land will go up, because non-resident landowners are going to be like, dude, I can go hunt Iowa every year now, buy me land in Iowa. And they'll come. And what usually happens is they displace local hunters. Local hunters don't have anywhere to go because, again, access to the ground is hard, because we're less than 2%. We're less than 2% of the state is public ground. And so then we have a flood of public land hunters because there's this displacement, thus making the public land for hunting in Iowa very competitive, on top of all the non-resident tags that they're, you know, non-residents coming in and hunting the public during that, which I'm okay with. But it's just that there's this displacement, and it just makes it harder for the actual resident to enjoy what we actually are here all year round for. You know, like we pay, I know they pay property taxes, but I live here. I support the communities all year round. I buy gas in this state all year round. I go to the grocery stores in this state all year round, not just 1 week a year. Okay. And so Take that however you want it. That's just my personal opinion, and that might get me hated on, but it is what it is. Like, look at what happened in Illinois in the 90s. Like, Western Illinois in the 90s, you talk to any resident there, and when they felt the boom of the big buck boom in Pike County, just imagine if you were a resident and you lived in Pike County, Illinois, and all these outfitters came in, and all these, you know, the leasing system put into play, and all these non-resident landowners started coming in, and you got displaced. Like, you had to drive to a completely different county to hunt. But I have a feeling that is, like, a lot of residents were pissed that happened. Mm-hmm. So Iowa has the ability to prevent that, still keeping Iowa the best state in the country, and then allowing people to come in at a, you know, at whatever, 3 years, 4 years, in some cases 5 years to draw a tag. Certain other states are every other, or other parts of the state are every other. And so it just depends on what you want to do. And then for a non-resident landowner to come in and go, hey, well, that's unfair to us. Well, why did you buy land in this state anyway? You're going to buy land in this state, then you're going to say it's unfair. Well, you should have never bought land in this state to begin with. If that's the issue for you. Right. So it's just what we see in everywhere else. People are leaving California because the rules and regulations in just life, right, suck in California and New York. They're moving to other places and then trying to implement the same political system in those states. And it's driving the residents of that state crazy, because they don't want to see that kind of change. And so I don't know. I could go on forever about certain things like that, but the whole point of this conversation, though, is there is a silver lining to the cloud. And after going to after rallying the troops at the Iowa Deer Classic, after working with the Iowa Bowhunters Association and getting the word out about these crazy bills that are coming into our state, it really does make me a believer that if we united, as if the hunters of Oklahoma united, and we said to the politicians, and we said to the Department of Natural Resources, here is what we would like to see, and actually have open communication with them about certain rules and regulations, whatever state you live in. Because one of the questions that I put in a on there was, would you want, there's two questions. One was, would you want your firearm season pushed into December outside of the rut? And I think it was like 75 to 25, 75% of people said yes, 25% of people said no. Right. And so the last time I checked, we were in a democracy, right? If more people wanted a certain thing, then we should probably try to work on that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's unfortunate for the minority because of that. But I mean, what are you going to do? The whole point of this conversation, though, is that if we band together and come with a united voice of thousands of people, and we say to these politicians, no, 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 we don't want this rule. And we go to the DNR and say, hey, we would like to see this happen. What would the impact be? Because we can't go into the Department of Natural Resources and say, there's 10,000 of us who want this, make it happen. Because that's the wrong way to look at it. The right way to look at it is, there's 10,000 of us who want this to happen. What would be the impact on the natural resource if this rule goes through? And so I feel like people still have the power to do that, to make these changes. And all we have to do is unite, work together, and just let everybody know that, you know, the outdoorsmen and the hunters in this state, we don't want to be messed with. Right. And so keep all the politics out of the natural resource world and just manage the natural resource. And we will be the say of if we like, you know, if we like it or not. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? I kind of took up a whole amen. Bunch of time there.
No, I was going to say amen. No, I love it. The whole time I was thinking, I got two quick things for you. Let's say I moved to Iowa tomorrow. This is for your Iowa people and yourself.
Yeah.
If I moved to Iowa tomorrow, there's probably two things I would say. One, if you really want to protect your deer herd and everything like that, I think of all the things you just mentioned, I think the biggest one is the out-of-state landowners, not letting out-of-state landowners have automatic tags. Because I can promise you, if that were to pass, half of Texas would be up there tomorrow buying land and you know, all those tags, people like myself and all over. So I think out of all the things you mentioned, I think that's probably the biggest one in protecting yourselves.
Yeah.
And two, this is kind of like an outsider's in. So I have never hunted Iowa. I actually hope to be there this fall. I bought my first Iowa point in, I believe, 2016 and still have not got to hunt it yet. No, I haven't actually applied yet, but so I got one point. The next year I forgot, so I missed a year, and then I put in every year since. So I have 5 points, which took me 6 years to get, and then this is my seventh year. Well, I'm actually going to apply to try to get the tag. So just for you and, you know, all you Iowans, you know, a little bit of relief. Like it really is difficult to get one of these tags, you know, and so. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying y'all should bump, you know, and let more out-of-state people in, but I think even if you did, I don't think that would be the end of the world. You know, right. I don't know how many out-of-state people come and hunt Oklahoma and Texas, but I can probably promise you it's over 6,000, you know?
Yeah.
And we still have a lot of really great deer. So that's meant to be kind of an encouragement to you guys. Obviously, I know y'all probably like to keep it limited. But like I said, kind of as an outsider in, like, I am looking forward to hunting Iowa so much. And I think listening to you and other people from Iowa, like, I have realistic goals. Like, when I go to Iowa, I'm going knowing that there's a good chance I will not kill the biggest buck of my entire life just because I'm hunting in Iowa. You know, just I'm not going to go there and just all of a sudden the 220 is going to show up on public land or anywhere I get permit. You know, like, I know that.
Right.
For me, going to Iowa and experiencing, you know, an Iowa hunt, I'm excited to see that crazy rut, you know, like a doe goes by and there's 7 bucks chasing after her and there's just deer running everywhere. Like that's why I want to go hunt Iowa. I want to have that just crazy rut experience where you have just deer everywhere, big bucks running around. Hopefully I'll kill one. But I think for people listening, a lot of people need to realize that. Cause I think, just talking to people and listening to other podcasts, I think a lot of people think like, oh, I'm going to go to Iowa and kill the biggest buck of my entire life. And maybe you come from a state where, you know, 140 is going to be the biggest buck of your entire life. And I think that's very doable in Iowa. Excuse me. But, you know, if you're a hardcore hunter and you have some decent spots to hunt, go for the experience. Don't necessarily go thinking you're going to tag state record.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all about setting expectations for yourself. And just kind of to reiterate here, to anybody who's listening, that I feel if you have a problem, there's other people out there who have the same problem. And so, especially when it comes to the hunting rules and regulations in your state, I really feel that if hunters united in whatever state that you live in, if you united and you worked together, because a lot of times I feel like the outdoorsman has been dismissed so many times by the government or by whatever organization, they've just said, it's not worth voicing my opinion anymore. And so you've decided to voice your opinion, not voice your opinion, and then the rules and regulations get passed. Mm-hmm. And then you're even more unhappy with the state of your natural resource, whatever natural resource that is. And so the time to get the change, and even, you know, even for someone, let's just say 99% of Iowa or 99% of people in a given state don't like a rule and regulation. Well, I feel that even though there's a rule and regulation passed, and that a majority of the people don't like, if you worked together, if you united, and if you communicated properly, those rules and regulations will definitely be changed, because politicians, they want to be in a job. They want to be a politician. And if you tell them, hey man, if you don't support this, I have X number of people over here who will not vote for you again next year. And so, as far as the natural resources is concerned, I still think the outdoorsmen in any given state have the power to rise up and communicate with the Department of Natural Resources and the politicians and say, we're not going to take this shit anymore. And we want to see some different rules and regulations. So don't give up is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
I hope that makes sense. So, mm-hmm. Well, I know I did. I know I kind of got heated there and did a lot of the talking towards the end.
Good.
What's the overall state of Oklahoma? Let's just say the overall feel, the overall vibe. Would you say that the residents in your state are happy with the current rules and regulations?
I think so. I think so. I think out of all of them, you know, I think the one tag for out-of-staters would probably be an awesome change. But I think overall people are pretty happy.
Gotcha. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with me a little bit about this. Whenever I have a podcast like this, they're usually based off of an emotion, right? Something that's making me mad or making me happy or frustrating me. And I don't feel that rules and regulations should be made based off of emotions, right? I think it needs to be science, right? Every decision about a natural resource needs to be science-based, needs to be studied. It needs to be, that's how proper management is done through science, if you ask me. And sometimes based off of, let's just say, weather or drought or disease or something like that, those rules and regulations will need to be micromanaged a little bit based off of that. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, right, let science and data do the talking, and then the emotion can come after that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just kind of the way I feel about that. But again, John, man, I really do appreciate your time, man.
Absolutely, man. I enjoyed it. I love this stuff. So.
And there you have it. Another episode in the books. Huge shout out to John. I know I took up a lot of the time, and I want to get him back on again. But once I get rocking and rolling on something that I'm really passionate about, it becomes the Dan Johnson Show, and I do apologize about that. So anyway, thank you very much. please go out and voice your opinions. Let everybody know what you feel. Gather with like-minded individuals and then take those that voice to the Department of Natural Resources, to the the politicians in your area, and let them know, hey man, don't mess with our wildlife, right? Let's manage it, but let's not mess with it. And there's a lot of people out there who do not have the natural resources' best interest in mind, just dollar amounts. And so that's where we need to step in, and we need to have this voice and let everybody know, don't tread on me type of a speech. So huge shout out to John. Huge shout out to all of you for taking time out of your day to listen. Huge shout out to Tethered, Wasp, Hunt Stand, and Vortex. And then also go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review, let everybody know how awesome the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast is. And also let everybody know about the Sportsman's Empire, and let them know how badass that network is as well. So thank you. Good vibes in, good vibes out. If you're going to be in a tree, wear your damn safety harness. Have a good weekend. Thank you.